Hello, everybody. This week, we're talking about Good Will Hunting.
Hit the music.
Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty.
As previously mentioned, this is Good Will Hunting.
Nope, this is Flaherty's on Films, a podcast where we... A podcast where we talk about films as recommended by our devoted and wonderful and mostly attractive fans.
And we're talking about Good Will Hunting, so something wrong.
Michael, do you want to tell us what Good Will Hunting, the film from 1997, is about?
I'd love to. Will Hunting, a janitor at MIT, has a gift for mathematics, but needs help from my psychologist to find direction in life.
Michael, remember halfway through watching this movie that when you realized his name was Will Hunting and that was so funny to you?
That was my only bit for the episode.
So and I just stole it from you?
We're out of jokes. Colleen, what are your first impressions of the film?
Couldn't call it mediocre, Will Hunting.
I'm excited for the sequel, Bad Ben Affleck. That's my second bit. Hey, what'd you think of the film?
Well, I didn't enjoy it as much as that bit. It's a fine film. It was fun. It was delightful. I thought Robin Williams did a good job. That's my thoughts. What were your thoughts?
Me too. So let's go to our first segment. Bam.
Time for Sam. This is the part of the show where our good friend Sam comes on and tells us some really good facts about the show. The movie.
Yeah, not just this podcast.
That's unless you want to tell us some cool facts about our show.
That's a different episode.
That's fair. Good Will Hunting started off as a homework assignment. Matt Damon was in a playwriting class at Harvard, and he was assigned to write a one-act play. Instead, he would create a 40-page partial script.
There's not a lot.
Well, considering he was supposed to do a one-act play, and he kind of just like went full movie on it.
How many pages is a one-act play?
Yeah, that's my question. Like,
a one-act play is actually only 30 pages.
So it's not that much more.
If anybody listens to the West Wing Weekly podcast, which I guess not anymore, they just stopped. But they always would talk about, Aaron Sorkin would do these huge episodes. They'd be like, 40 pages. And I'd be like, that's nothing to me. I need some context for that. And I never got it.
There'd be 1,000 letters.
Exactly. I don't know what that is. Yeah. Go on, Sam.
When he left Harvard to go to Hollywood, he took his homework assignment with him. Together with his lifelong friend, Ben Affleck, he would work on the script, morphing it into a tale of a rough-and-tumbled, self-taught genius who was learning about himself.
I really wish the movie was called Rough and Tumble Self-Taught Genius.
Who was learning about
himself. Who is that? Parentheses.
He's having a hard time.
Yeah, it's a long title.
Who was learning about himself through a therapist while being aggressively pursued by the government.
Like Jason Bourne!
It's basically like Jason Bourne.
Was Jason Bourne, did he go to psychiatrist?
No, but he was pursued.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, no, it was very much more action-packed.
If they combine all of Matt Damon's movies, he'll be on the run from the government with a psychiatrist while on Mars. That'll be fun.
Oh, that would be fun.
Oh my God, when you started that bit, I was like, I could not think of another Matt Damon movie. It was bad.
I got you.
Thank you.
Oh my God, I can't think of another one besides
that. All I could think of was that
there's a movie where he's shrinking.
Oh, yeah, Downsize?
Yeah.
That movie was weird.
You've seen it.
I have seen it. I saw it on a plane.
He's like a famous actor. Why can't
He's been in so many. I could only think of that Team America thing where they do a puppet of Matt Damon.
He was in Ocean.
Matt Damon.
He was in the Ocean movies.
Yes. That's a famous role of his. So he'll be doing a heist too.
Yes.
Just stealing some sand. I don't know what there's to steal on Mars.
Potatoes.
Oh, yeah, sure. He'll steal his own crop of potatoes.
And no one will know who did it.
Yeah. They just call that harvesting.
Perfect crime.
Especially if he eats the evidence.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So that's what the screenplay was kind of about, minus the Mars and the stealing. Eventually, Castle Rock Entertainment would purchase the script. President Rob Reiner, along with the writer William Goldman, convinced the boys to get rid of the thriller chase part of the script. Basically, they're like, you have two films here. You have your thriller and you have your more character study. You need to pick one. It's not going to work to do both.
Right. Guys, he was in Saving Private Ryan, which we've seen on this podcast.
He was Private Ryan.
And Ford vs. Ferrari, which I just saw. It is not good. Anyway.
He's been around.
Go on.
So Castle Rock continuously asks for more and more rewrites.
Sorry, interrupt. That is my favorite reaction gif. Whenever someone feels old, they play the gif of Matt Damon transforming into an old man. Like someone go, oh, the 90s. That was 30 years ago. They play that gif.
Wait, why was he transforming to an old man?
From Saving Private Ryan.
Because it was a flashback. This is not going to translate well. This is an audio medium.
We'll put it on our Facebook page for all you fans.
Are we going to do that?
Sure. Maybe. Right, maybe. We'll see.
Don't. No guarantees.
Put it in the show notes. I've heard podcasters say that.
Castle Rock continuously asked for more and more rewrites while not really finding anyone to actually make the movie. Frustrated, Affleck gave the script to his Mallrats director, Kevin Smith, who would pass it on to Harley Wilson. Wilson loved the script and went to the boys to talk about buying the rights. He only had one question for Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Quote, I only have one really big note on the script. About page 60, the two leads, both straight men, have a sex scene. What the hell is that?
Whoa.
So wow. Frustrated with all the rewrites that Castle Rock had been requesting, the boys had added in a blowjob between Will and Sean just to see if anyone was actually rereading the rewrites. As soon as Wilson found the scene, they agreed to have him make the movie, and Miramax would buy the rights to Good Will Hunting.
So they're like, if someone's going to do the bare minimum work, they're hired.
Pretty much.
You would be the same. Oh, you're going to make my movie, actually? Whatever. You've read it?
That's exactly what I would be like. But I would also be the executive who they pass over because they didn't bother to read the script, but had a lot of notes anyway.
The title isn't even centered on the page.
Not enough commas, but also too many.
I work with professionals.
So a big other part of this. So originally, when Castle Rock Entertainment had it, they wanted Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt to play the leads. Hot. Whereas Ben Affleck and Matt Damon were really pushing for themselves to be in the leads. But once they worked with Miramax, they're like, yeah, you can be the lead. The next big one to hire is Sean, the therapist. So they went to Robin Williams, who read the script. And he found it was really extraordinary. He was really interested in Sean. And especially when he found out where the inspiration came from. And it was based off of Matt Damon's mom and Ben Affleck's dad, who are professors.
Oh, cool.
So filming took place between April and June of 1997. It was mostly filmed on kind of the outskirts of Boston. They had to kind of improvise a couple different places. Like, they couldn't actually film in Harvard or MIT, but they could kind of film around. And there were certain places, because both Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are big Boston boys. So there was a couple places, like the bar that they go to is like the local hangout, and they specifically really wanted to shoot there. So a couple of those. And probably the most famous, though, is the Boston Park Garden Bench that Will and Sean sit in. After Williams died in 2014, it became a temporary shrine for him.
Aww.
And there's been talks about kind of putting like a...
genie.
Putting a statue...
a lamp!
A statue of a genie on that bench. It's a little weird, but so.
Wait, what did they really want to put on?
A statue of Will.
Oh, okay.
Robin Williams, like sitting on the bench like he was in the movie. Aww. They haven't done it yet, but there's talks. On the very first day of shooting, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, it was a scene between Robin Williams.
Are you saying Ben Affleck?
I was going to ask.
Affleck?
Yeah, there we go. Is
it what I was saying?
You sound like you were putting a T at the end, like Affleck.
Maybe it should be.
I didn't even know there could be that many consonants together.
See, it's like the script. I was just putting a little thing in there to see if you guys were really paying
exactly.
attention.
And we were not until just now.
I like the time. I don't always pay attention.
So they were just really emotional. The first scene that was actually shot for this film was a scene between Robin Williams and Stellan Skarsgård. I can never say it.
Skarsgård, you said it.
Oh, perfect.
The Swedish third dad from Mamma Mia. Everybody knows what I'm talking about.
So the first scene that they filmed was between these two. And when Matt Damon and Ben Affleck... Damn it.
Just call him Ben. We know now.
I'm just calling him Benny. Ben Affleck now. Affleck.
We're the former it. Mr. Jennifer Garner.
It was very emotional
Jennifer
for them.
Jennifer Garner? Do you mean Jennifer Lopez?
No, he married Jennifer Garner. He was engaged to Jennifer Lopez, but they broke up.
I set you up.
What was their nickname when they were dating? Oh, Bennifer.
Yeah.
That was it. Okay, sure. Sorry. So to quote Matt Damon, when Gus called action and we watched these guys, I mean accomplished actors, do our scene verbatim. We had waited so long for this to happen. I remember just sitting next to Ben and I had tears rolling down my cheeks because I was just so happy and relieved that it was really happening.
Oh, nice.
So you guys apparently did not notice, but I thought this was a fun quote, so I'm going to put it out there. Matt Damon has gotten a lot of pushback for his hair in this film, which apparently neither of you thought was an issue.
Well, I mean, it was just very, like, 90s. It was fine.
I mean, I've seen janitors. They often have that kind of...
sexy hair.
They have that 90s sexy hair.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, it was pretty similar to Jack Dawson's.
Yeah, it was very similar. I guess it was a little more, like, done, if that makes sense. So a little more coiffed.
That's fair. Well, this is a quote from Matt Damon because I thought it was funny. For whatever weird reason, at that age, I loved that haircut. Gus was like, really? Ben was like, really? If you look at Ben's hair in the movie, it's totally acceptable by today's standards. But no, I wanted the frosted fucking hair. I don't know what my problem was. I looked like I should be singing backup for Color Me Bad.
Aww. What's that? What's Color Me Bad?
It's a mid-90s group.
Yeah. I'm excited
that
for
was
that
very
clip.
Popular.
I'm bad. Color me.
Nope.
Okay.
So the movie premiered and it grossed over.
It's quite funny.
It grossed over $225 million, which, considering that its budget was $10 million, was quite a success. It would be nominated for 9 Academy Awards. It would win 2. So it would be nominated for, but not win, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor Matt Damon, Best Supporting Actress Minnie Driver. Best Film Editing, Best Original Dramatic Score, and Best Original Song. Do you know what song beat this song?
No, what? Oh, wait.
My Heart Will Go On.
I was going to guess that.
Well, you didn't.
But I was.
It's a good song.
It won 2 Academy Awards. It won Best Supporting Actor for Robin Williams. And it won Best Original Screenplay for Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Nice.
Couple fun facts about that. When Robin Williams won, he sent his peer, who dubbed his voice in Germany, I'm not going to even try and pronounce the name, a small replica of his Oscar statue with a note saying, thank you for making me famous in Germany.
Aww. Mm.
And my other fun fact for you about the Academy Awards, well, it's actually your question of the week. Ben Affleck, to this day, is still the youngest person to win an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. How old was he?
I have a guess. 22.
26.
25.
Nice, nice.
Any just guesses on how old Matt Damon was? He was the second.
26.
26. 25. Damn it.
We're bad at this.
And my final fact for you guys today, it's just an adorable quote I found that I really liked. Robin Williams was on David Letterman talking about winning this Oscar for this role. And he said, it's amazing. When you win the Academy Award, you have like about a week where everyone's like, hey, Good Will Hunting, way to go, Good Will Hunting, Academy Award, way to go. And 2 weeks later, it's like, hey, Mork, how are you?
It's weird when you hear quotes from people and you're like, I heard it in his voice. Aww. But like even the Matt Damon voice, like I heard it because like that just sounds like what Matt Damon would say.
And that was, bam.
Time for Sam.
What's a Matt Damon voice?
I can't do an impression of him, but like the quote that was said earlier, I'm like, oh, that sounds like what he would say.
Oh, that's nice.
Is it nice?
I don't know. So this movie was recommended by big fan of the show, cool person Junice Norman. Here's what she had to say about it.
Oh.
Overall, it is incredibly impressive that this is Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's first writing gig, and they blow it out of the park. The acting in this film is absolutely astounding, from Damon playing the brilliant roughneck Southie, by the way. If you guys don't want me to do gratuitous, bad Boston accents.
Do it!
I'm just saying, if you don't like that, turn off the podcast right now, because there's going to be a lot of that.
Oh, you will do it. Fantastic.
To Robin Williams playing exactly who I imagine Robin Williams was in real life. Compassionate, funny, kind, and heartbreakingly struggling with his own pain. Wow, that's beautiful, Junice. Michael, do you want to read the rest of Junice's?
Oh, sure. This story has many different levels of narrative. The underdog, who has a troubled personal life and is blessed with genius, the sweet love story with Minnie Driver, whose character's background is completely opposite of Will Hunting's, and Will's rowdy, fun-loving neighborhood friends who can't imagine why he won't seek out a future where he can easily leave the nest and become something great.
And then she finishes with, "I honestly don't have much else to say about this film. The allure of story tugs at our heartstrings while making us laugh and cry. Just one of those solid, good movies." I'll leave it at that. Junus, that was great.
So
thank
good.
You so much.
You should write a screenplay.
I should. Why don't we go hear from some other people who might be almost as smart as Junus.
Almost.
In a little segment we call Critics Corner. I would like to note that some of these reviews are one-star reviews from Amazon. Half of the one-star reviews were customers receiving Kill Bill 2 instead of Good Will Hunting.
That's an interesting mix-up.
An interesting mix-up that happened 100 times.
Whoa.
Anyway, I'll start.
Cool.
A crowd pleaser with bags of charm to spare, says Quentin Curtis.
That's a cool name.
Daily Telegraph.
I wish my name was Quentin Curtis.
Well, he's British.
That doesn't change the scenario at all.
I'm just saying, at least you're American, Michael.
Oh, there. I've got that. I can have a cheeseburger. All right, here we go. This is from Mio. Fun name. Hollywood hype wins out again, somehow convincing millions that this is a great movie. Oh, let's see where this goes. Honestly, my husband and I sat there astonished at how predictable this film was. Worthy of Academy Awards? My cats could roll better film in their litter box. A very basic storyline that may seem compelling to a young child, but not suited for children, as the language can be kind of harsh. Go outside and play a game of touch football. You'll have better spent your time.
The best thing about Good Will Hunting is not in its well-crafted psychological symmetries, but in the just plain messiness of its humanity. It's rowdy. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. It rings of life, says Dwayne Brigg of The Hollywood Reporter.
What a phrase. It rings of life. Damn, that is such a meaningless nothing.
Well, I did it my best NPR voice, so I thought it would sound deeper.
All right. So this is from Janet Smith. Every sentence was F-F-F-F-bomb. Tiresome and really bad experience for youth. The usual sex scenes. Good message in the crude rapping.
You know what's so funny is a lot of the one-star reviews were about the bad language. And that I did not register that at all.
We're
and in fact, after I watched the movie, I'm like, oh, what a hokey, lovely family movie.
I literally don't remember the swearing.
I don't either. I know it's a Gus Van Sant film and he normally does super, you know, like gritty films. So I think maybe that's the only Gus Van Sant touch, maybe. But anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't remember it being that bad.
We're in a different age.
It's acted and directed with care, and Damon is outstanding. His scenes with Driver being especially sparky, says Derek Adams of Time Out. I read that a few times, and I'm like, Adam Driver? Which is Minnie Driver. I only ever say Minnie Driver. I've never heard her referred to by her last name.
Yeah.
And then I Googled, is Minnie Driver? No,
what
she's not related.
What kind of publication is Time Out?
It's a magazine. It's a thing.
For teens?
No, it's like a what's cool in pop culture. And every major...
Time Out.
Every city, major city in America has a Time Out specific to them. Like there's a Time Out Chicago, a Time Out New York, I think.
Fantastic. So this is from Blacken, who sounds like a Street Fighter character. Here we go. Good Will Hunting is the most worthless film I've seen since Forrest Gump. Let's start with the basic problems of this film. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Matt's character is trash. Yes, I know he's had a hard life and finally good things start happening to him. Free school, great job offers, and one of the most beautiful women, parentheses Minnie Driver, in the world falls in love with him. So what's the problem? Life's tough, I guess.
Whoa.
So yeah, he doesn't have a lot of struggles. Is that the...
I guess.
And okay, fair enough.
That was Critics Corner.
Yeah.
Let's go to our next segment.
Clayton, what's your favorite part?
Hands down, Robin Williams, also Minnie Driver, both of their performances. Now, Minnie Driver, less so as a like, oh, wow, she's a great actress. She was just so charming. I loved it when she was on screen. Robin Williams was legit good. Those are my favorite parts. That's it.
What's your favorite part? My favorite part is Minnie Driver. I just thought she was so charming. Just like, who laughs like that? I'm going to just put in a little clip of her laughing, and then the audience will be like, oh, it's a fun laugh.
Speaking of...
You have a fact about the laugh? You have a laugh fact?
I don't have a laugh fact.
You have a laugh fact?
I do. No, this is just, I want to just give Harley Winston as much as I could. He really didn't want to have Minnie Driver. He didn't think she was sexy enough.
Jesus fuck.
Man, that sounds like the worst character trait he could possibly have,
that,
this guy.
That is the
this guy who ran Miramax.
That's where you bottom out.
Oh, boy.
Clay, what's your least favorite part about the film?
All right. I'm sorry to go into this a bit, but I thought it was a really fun watch. I really liked the movie, but I didn't feel like it was a great movie.
Why?
It seemed like they were kind of skirting talking about class differences.
There was class differences.
Matt
was poor.
It was. But it didn't feel like they were making a greater point about it. And even his trauma felt very kind of a little too neatly wrapped up.
Well, it's a movie. What are you going to do? What are you going to expect?
I feel like I've seen movies that do a better representation.
You want a therapy textbook? That's what you want?
But in a film. A really dry
10-hour long session where you're like, okay, now I'm learning things.
Yes, that's exactly what I want. It just felt like they gave Matt and Ben a lot of credit for this amazing psychological in-depth profile of this poor kid from Southie who's a secret genius. And that's not what I watch. I felt like I just watched a really nice movie with fun characters. And also, I hate to kind of agree with the last reviewer, but I feel like you could have picked a more tragic story than a super attractive young white guy who was a genius.
Like what?
A guy who had all that, but not super good looking or not white, or I don't know. He didn't seem like he was struggling.
How do you sell tickets to that movie? Guys, a hard life and nothing worked out?
Well, no, and it did work out despite the adversity. It didn't feel like Matt Damon had a ton of adversity because the trauma of his past life.
Trauma is not adversity.
Can I finish?
I'm trying to just be as devil's advocate as I can.
I don't feel like the movie really showed him being traumatized. They just told us.
There's a flashback in the scene where
they told us he was traumatized. I didn't feel it from Matt's performance or the screenplay.
He was mean to Minnie Driver, his girlfriend.
Yeah,
why do you think he did that?
And then Robin Williams takes us through, you push people away because of your past. And I didn't really get that. He just seemed like a normal dude.
Even when he was mean to Minnie Driver?
Yeah.
Borderline? Oh, that's like normal behavior to you?
Yeah.
You're like, that's acceptable?
Yeah, that's what I was like. I was like, what a cool way to treat people.
Wow. I can't believe you just admitted that on radio.
So yeah, I guess my least favorite part is that I think it is a little overhyped in that it's not a great film about these broad themes. It's just a cute film.
Hmm.
Which is, I don't know. Maybe it's a little unfair. So what do you think?
I 100% agree.
After all that.
Well, so all I was saying, I didn't know anything about this film. I knew the basic premise that it was a guy who was a janitor and he was secretly really smart. So yeah, I thought it'd be, right. So it's about class.
Yeah.
Because he's from whatever.
Southie.
Or it's about intelligence because he's really smart. And it's not really either of those. Basically, the whole problem with the movie is he's got this super, he's got a lot of potential, but he's not like really executing all the potential because he's afraid because of his trauma. And that's resolved basically within one scene. When Robin Williams does the famous, it wasn't your fault
exactly.
Scene.
Exactly, one scene. And it's like, now we've done a breakthrough and you're done with therapy.
And it's not, the neatness isn't my problem. My problem is there's a whole movie besides that, which just kind of surrounds that. And it's not unentertaining, like, because Manny Driver's
it's
in it.
It's very entertaining.
But, like, it's just not a ton happens.
Right, and it doesn't feel like the class part is a problem. So he, in the beginning, you know, he's got a rap sheet because he's, you know, a kid from Southie with problems. But, oh boy, wait for a lot of that. But he gets that solved immediately, and then he's just a bit obstinate about it. But then it's fine.
Right, if you got a lot of potential, get over your trauma and then execute on that potential.
I also love how uneven Robin Williams' accent is. And
he did just, a great job.
He did such a good job.
But Minnie Driver, so cool.
Just, she was great.
Maybe put in a clip of Tarzan.
No, 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 no. I'm Jane.
No, 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 no. I'm Jane.
I actually just watched Tarzan.
Why?
Because I was trying to think of Disney movies to show my kid. And I was like, what about Tarzan?
Does she comprehend films?
Yeah.
No, she looks at the screen.
There were monkeys in it.
Oh, she likes monkeys. That's why you did it.
That's why.
Yeah, sure.
But she's equally charming in that.
Hell yeah. That was good casting.
Just wicked charming.
It's good.
Anyway, why don't we go to our intern summary?
The premise is we have an intern and they wrote a summary for us and we're going to read it right now. Oh, it's a long one.
We first meet Will, played by Matt Damon, as he hangs out in his tiny apartment. When he's not reading, he's hanging out with his friends, his Southie crew, working as a janitor, mopping the hallways at MIT. Go Pats.
Meanwhile, a professor at MIT named Gerald Lambow, by Stellan Skarsgård, puts an extremely complicated math problem on the hallway chalkboard to see if any of his students are up to the challenge. Turns out they're not, but Will, parentheses Hunting, knows how to solve it, and he writes out the answer on the chalkboard when no one's watching.
Did we not talk about how Good Will Hunting is a weird movie title?
Yeah, you opened with that.
Yeah, but I don't feel like we talked about it.
I did my whole the sequel is bad Ben Affleck joke. Right, what's the discussion you want to have?
All right. After finding Will's answer, Professor Lambow takes things up a notch. He leaves another problem on the board, one that only a few of the world's greatest minds can solve. And that's when he catches Will. Lambow tries to go after him to find out who he is.
That's why I agree that this movie's not especially deep, because I think the first hour of this is like, wait, he's a janitor, but he's really smart? And that's actually kind of watching it, not really knowing the movie. I'm like, how is this even a movie? Because that's not a premise. That's like a BuzzFeed article. Like, oh, this janitor is really smart.
I love how they kind of clumsily highlight differences sometimes. He goes to the janitor. He's like, oh, I need to get him. He's like, yeah, man, maybe you can call his PO officer. And he's like, PO officer? Yeah, his parole officer.
What kind of textbook is that?
Excuse me, I'm a professor at MIT.
Is that like a sports car?
I'm very prestigious. That's how he talks.
I got mud on my shoes.
Yeah, what are you, fucking queer? And that's what they say.
Okay. Where are we?
It's fine because I'm quoting the movie. It's not offensive.
Though. Right, we could say it.
Meanwhile... Will.
Oh, yeah, it's my turn. Meanwhile, Will gets himself into some trouble with the law. Uh-oh. When he assaults a police officer. Not good. Combined with his mile-long rap sheet, the assault puts Will on a one-way street to lockup.
Uh-oh.
I have to burp. But, edit out. But, Lambow tracks him down at the last second and makes a deal with the judge.
Dude, Will, we live in Wisconsin. It's Lambow. It's spelled exactly like Lambeau Field.
What did I say?
Lambow.
Lambouy tracks him down at the last second and makes a deal with the judge. Will could stay out of prison as long as he works with Lambou on math every week and gets some therapy on the side.
Dude, so a movie that's trying to say things about class and privilege just skirt over the fact that if you have a smart MIT professor who wants to do right, like, oh, you don't have to go to prison because this... super cool European is vouching for you.
Exactly.
But it's not saying that.
Think how privileged he is.
But they're not saying that. They're like, oh, well, this is moving the plot forward.
Oh, it's what's what you heard. I heard. Oh,
is that what I heard?
You heard it. And what I heard is, man, to Easy Street.
Yeah, to Easy Street.
Parking's free on Easy Street.
Sorry.
No stoplights.
Sorry, listeners at home, because this is not a visual medium, just watching Michael's face. Yeah. Anyway, Will agrees to therapy, but mentally destroys the first five therapists in a weird... There's like one scene where he points out the therapist must be secretly gay, but he's not no problem with it. And it's just... weird. Anyway,
it's a 90s thing.
But they go through it real fast in a montage, which I do appreciate. Mm. Lambow pairs him with... the five therapists Lambow pairs him with. Finally, Lambow reaches out to an old buddy named Sean McGuire, played by Robin Williams, who's from the same Southie neighborhood of Boston.
Oh, shit. At first, Will seems like he's too much for McGuire. Within minutes of meeting each other, Will realizes that McGuire has a lot of sadness around his memories of his wife. So Will pokes and prods until the therapist grabs him by the throat, threatens him.
I loved that part
loved.
Sorry, not that part specifically. I just feel like some of the writing about McGuire, Sean, and his wife was a little hammy, but Robin Williams pulled it off so sincerely in a really lovely way that it just...
Sometimes you're in the mood for ham.
Yeah, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
After McGuire's had a chance to regroup, he takes Will to a park bench and tells him that it doesn't matter how smart he is or how much he's learned from books. All that matters is that Will is too chicken to live life on any terms but his own, which means he'll never know true love or experience the best things in life firsthand. So he's just hiding behind being too smart, I guess.
You've never really experienced these things for yourself. Well, when he's not in therapy or his math sessions with Lambeau, he hangs out with a girl from Harvard named Skylar, played by Minnie Driver. Things go well at first, but Will is an orphan and has deep-seated fear that eventually anyone he loves will walk away from him. Will. So he makes a preemptive strike and pushes Skylar away before she can get a chance to hurt him.
So we didn't talk about the famous scene. The other thing I knew about this movie... is there's a scene where someone's hitting on Minnie Driver and he's like in Harvard, so he's saying super pretentious things. Then Ben Affleck comes over and tries to hit on Minnie and her friend. He obviously doesn't know. He tries to pretend he goes to Harvard too, but doesn't know anything. And then Will comes up and he just mentally, intellectually destroys the Harvard douche.
Hell yeah, nice.
And then there's the, you like apples? How about them apples? That's the only, I knew that line was in the movie. What did you think of that scene?
I had no thought. I mean, were you going to say something about the scene?
Well, I just feel like we should comment on this super famous line and scene, but I actually don't have anything to say about it other than because it felt like they were both just being pretentious douches and Matt kind of won that round.
Because he's smarter.
I guess, but.
Yeah, it's not really saying anything. It's just kind of fun. Like, haha, you got him.
Which I liked.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
And he's like a good friend, which I thought was kind of a nice through line of this. So he has his crew who are a bit rough and tumble, but they're just so nice to each other. They just like each other.
There's a whole scene where they talk about masturbating. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, this could probably be cut.
Right? Yep. Yep.
Anyway, but
remember when Minnie Driver tells the blowjob joke? That was very cute.
She's one of the boys. That's how you know.
She does that cute Irish accent.
Oh, hey, Mary, that's a very sweet offer.
That was really funny. Gosh, she's the best part. I wouldn't mind if it was just her in the movie.
Tensions rise between Professor Lambeau and Will's therapist. See, Sean thinks that Will should figure out for himself what he wants to do with his life, but Lambeau won't be satisfied with any result that doesn't have Will using his gifts as a mathematician. Eventually, the two get into a huge blow-up, and Lambeau storms away, calling Sean a loser and a failure. Oh, I actually kind of liked that sparring, because I've thought, the way this I wrote this out, it sounds like, oh, he's just being a jerk. But he obviously put himself out a lot of time and a lot of professional risk to help this guy, because he's like, this is important for the world that this genius gets to explore and add to the world of math and academia. And it would be tragic for all of us if he didn't get to grow that way. And I thought that was an interesting...
It is interesting, but the film obviously frames Lamba as being obviously wrong.
Are you going to pronounce it differently every time?
I'm trying to.
I felt like he had a really good point.
He did, know that's what I'm saying. He did have a really good point, but I think the film is like, look at this.
But love, man. Am
but
I right?
Like, think about his feelings.
Like, nah. Ugh,
stupid film. Feelings are not everything.
Meanwhile, Will...
It's my turn. Meanwhile, Will keeps working at a construction job that he got through his buddy Chucky, played by Ben Affleck. One day, Chucky confronts Will about how he's wasting his intelligence hanging around the construction site. But Will says it doesn't matter if he's smart, as long as he's happy. Chucky insists that Will owes a debt to the other men working on the construction site who wish they had the gifts like Will does. So I guess actually they are kind of agreeing with Lumbu, who are like saying, like, if you have gifts, you should really be using them.
I also thought, again, a movie that's kind of trying to say some things about class, where I can't remember, it was at Lambeau who's saying to, so, you know, Matt Damon, do you just want to grow up in Southie and have a good blue collar job and all your kids go to the same little league? And it's like, you're kind of, the movie is trying to say that that kind of small life is awful and terrible if you're smart enough. And that's really sad and kind of classist, isn't it?
Well, he's like, that kind of blue collar work is honorable, but not really.
It's honorable unless you're too smart for it.
Unless you don't have to do it. It's not
yeah.
Honorable.
So it doesn't feel like it. I feel like the movie is kind of reinforcing classism is okay if there's a merit based reason for it.
But if Einstein was doing construction, that'd be a fucking waste.
Well, which I kind of get what they're saying there, but it just seems like everybody should be doing what they can do according to their talents, and classism is okay if that's what's happening.
And it's okay if he gets wealthy because doing that.
Oh, man. And Chucky's wish that he'll show up at Will's house one day and find Will gone forever.
You should read the next one, too.
In an effort to help Will get over his abandonment issues, Sean tells him a story of how he passed up on one of the greatest baseball games ever to go on a date with a woman who would one day be his wife, which was so sweet when he told that story. God, Robin Williams is a great actor. He's one of those, because I remember we were talking about Stranger Than Fiction, and you even mentioned Robin Williams doing that. And I said, I don't know, could he be serious enough? And I take back all of my doubts about it, because Robin Williams as a comedian is incredibly broad like Will Ferrell, but so good at being grounded and serious.
I don't think Will Ferrell's that broad.
His funniest comedy to me is very broad. Like Elf? Like
Anchorman? Broad, to me, I was picturing like you meant range.
No. Oh, broad means like really in your face, over the top comedy.
Oh, okay.
Is that what that means?
I don't feel like it does mean that.
I've been using that wrong a lot then. Anyway.
Just as long as you're confident.
Ah ha ha. Broad comedy is more slipstick, like pie in the face, people tripping over things. Comedy is that more is more associated with like stand up or I was using it correctly, everybody. Settle down.
Oh, we solved it.
Sorry. Okay. So he tells Will that he never regrets being with his wife, despite all the pain he still feels after losing her to cancer. It was so sweet.
So sad.
And he sees photos of the injuries Will got as an abused child. McGuire walks up to him and repeats the phrase, "It's not your fault." Until Will breaks down and weeps.
It's too bad if you come into the movie and that's all you know, that line happens, which I did. I'm like, well, this dude's like, oh, is he going to say it's not your fault? And then he just kind of does out of the blue. And then he keeps saying it for like an hour.
Yeah. What's your point?
I'm like, it didn't feel natural.
But then he was therapized. Done. No more trauma.
He goes, there you go. Sticker.
Wouldn't that be nice? Just going to therapy. It's like, you said the right words. You did it.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Would be nice.
In the final moments of the movie, Will takes a job with one of the think tanks that Professor Loomboo sets him up with. But then Chucky shows up at the door. He's not there. He left Boston and is headed for California in his car, hoping to get Skyler back. She's at Stanford. Before going, he leaves a note in Sean McGuire's mailbox saying he had to see about a girl, which is the same line McGuire used on his friends when he first met his wife.
Go Sox.
And you know the fun fact about that.
What?
Yeah, you already told us, but go ahead.
I didn't tell the podcast. So, Joyce, this is for you because you're... That last line that he says, bastard stole my line or something like that, was ad-libbed by Robin Williams.
Cool guy.
I didn't know that fact.
Sam told us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Michael, what do you grade the film?
Give it a B. I like the characters, Minnie Driver especially, and it was cute and it was nice.
I think I'm also going to give it a B. I don't think it would be on an AFI either. Which I know you don't care about, but I did genuinely enjoy this film.
Yeah, me too. B's a good grade.
Yeah. Michael, who are we sponsored by this week?
We're sponsored by the Girl Scouts.
Girl, go getter, innovator, risk taker, leader.
That spells girl.
It sure does.
What's
Michael.
Your favorite letter though?
I think go getter, because I like a good alliteration.
Fun.
I mean, they all sound pretty.
You don't always have to go get. You know what I mean?
But you do when you're in the Girl Scouts.
Yeah, and then you especially should go get.
Yeah. Also, I don't have to tell you folks at home, their cookies are the bomb.
We're eating them right now.
We're doing the Caramel Delights.
The best cookie.
Which I think used to be called samosas and still are in some regions of the country, weirdly.
Isn't just samosa the kind of cookie it is and that's just their brand?
Oh, I don't know that.
I thought that was the case.
It's because two different companies make the cookies, so depending on which company.
Oh, that's fun.
Is it fun?
It's very fun.
Freaking fun fact.
All right. So, let's close it out.
With our next film, shall we see? Let's go to the board. And Clueless.
Whoa.
Stay tuned for a trailer for the film Clueless.
Can't wait to see it.
See you next time. And cut.
So, okay. Like right now, for example, the Haitians need to come to America. But some people are all, what about the strain on our resources? But it's like when I had this garden party for my father's birthday, right? People came that like did not RSVP. So I was like totally bugging. I had to haul ass to the kitchen, squish in extra place settings, and like people were on mismatched chairs and all. But by the end of the day, it was like the more the merrier. And so if the government could just get to the kitchen, rearrange some things, we could certainly party with the Haitians.
Wow. You guys talk like grown-ups.
Oh, well, this is a really good school.
Mr. Hall was way harsh. He gave me a C minus.
Well, he gave me a C, which drags down my entire average.
Hello? There was a stop sign?
I totally paused.
You try driving in platforms.
Oh, should I write them a note?
Ew, get off of me.
As if. Cher's got attitude about high school boys.
It's a personal choice every woman has got to make for themselves.
Cher is saving herself for Luke Perry.
Cher, you're a virgin?
I mean, I'm not prude. I'm just highly selective. I mean, you see how picky I am about my shoes, and they only go on my feet.
Nice stems.
Thanks.
What the hell is that?
A dress.
Says who?
Calvin Klein. I'm gonna be a
supermodel. What are you doing? Yo, you're getting on the freeway! Get out of the street!
Go, girl.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. Whatever. Did I miss something? This big hair back?
Amber, my plastic surgeon doesn't want me doing any activity where balls fly at my nose.
Well, there goes your social life.
I'm gonna be a supermodel.